out of high school, I think I wanted to be like a horror writer, you know? I thought I would follow the path of like Stephen King or something.
That voice you're hearing is
I am Ian Abramson, and I am a comedian.
Do you need more water?
No, I'm okay. Keep that in. I think I've always been, like, I was kind of a ham as a child, you know, liked joking around. My father is big on being funny, and so I think that there was, like, a sense of that being important growing up in my home, and just kind of impromptu, silly, weird stuff. But then a little bit of the kind of showmanship stuff. I also, he got me very into magic and older physical comedy, so there was very much like a presentational sense about it as well. I liked the idea of comedy, I think, but I wasn't thinking about being a comedian.
Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven.
I think out of high school, I would have said novels or short stories. And then at different points in college, it became screenplays or just plays, or I also like to perform. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll write comedy.
Was there something specific that made you think comedy?
I read the Mike Sachs book, and Here's the Kicker, which is just like an amazing book of interviews of like comedy writers of all kinds of different types, you know. David Sedaris is in there, a bunch of people from The Daily Show, Bob Odenkirk. It's a really great range of comedy writers. Mm-hmm. There's so many different types of ways that these people have made a career for themselves writing things that are funny. And that was the first time I'd heard playwrights and stuff talk about that process and how that works professionally, but that was the first time I really thought of comedy in that way, and that really hit me. I liked trying to be funny.
What grade was this in college?
Ooh, I think I read that my third year of college, and that's when I started to think about writing comedy. I had been writing short films and little things here and there.
You were a theater major.
Yes, I was a theater major. And then the summer between my third and fourth year, I read Born Standing Up by Steve Martin.
So good.
Yeah, then that was it for me.
I got into this argument with name drop Wayne Fetterman about that book.
Did you read the Born Standing Up?
It could be. I'm hesitant to say the best because I'm maybe forgetting something, but off the top of my head, the best book I've ever read.
Oh, I read on stand-up. I thought you were going to say like the best comedy book or whatever. I would put it up as like the best book.
Okay. The best book. So it's better than War and Peace.
Maybe.
You're saying it's better than Moby Dick.
Maybe. I don't know.
Born Standing Up is a better book.
Well, I love true stories. And I found that book incredibly inspiring for anyone who's like, whether you're like an entrepreneur, a business person.
Just as far as pursuing.
Exactly. Okay. I don't know. Maybe not the best, but it'd be in the top definitely of mine favorite books of all time.
Okay. I get it. I love it. I mean, we're in agreement. I would really categorize it as a stand-up book as opposed to a book. But here's what
that was super. Like, I read that as I came from a background of music, and I did like traveling, self-funded tours and stuff, and could just relate to so much the creative person's journey, let alone a funny person's journey, like, so I could see how that could be a powerful book for someone in your situation.
It was huge. Absolutely. I remember picking it up and hyperventilating on like the first couple pages. Cause I was just like, whoa, this is exactly what I want to be doing. And he's not talking about fame or being rich. Like that kind of comes up, but it's like that first few pages is just about his process of trying to get good at stand up. And I liked performing, I liked writing, and that was the thing. I remember being in college talking to my academic advisor and saying to them, you know, what I really want to do is find a way for me to write my own stuff and perform, not thinking of stand-up at all. I want to find a way to perform my own stuff that I've written every day to get it better and better, and kind of take that around, tour that around a bit. And and she knew that what I was like kind of trying to pull from was vaudeville, and she just said, like, Ian, vaudeville's gone. Like, you can't, that doesn't exist anymore. You're just wanting to do vaudeville. I was like, I know, but there's got to be a way. And then I read Born Standing Up and was like, here's the way.
Yeah, it's funny because you're describing stand-up. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was describing stand-up.
Like a room, like you could go to these different bars around the country.
Totally.
Like you could have a microphone or no microphone if the acoustics are good.
Exactly, like, yeah.
Charge for admission.
Totally.
Tell jokes.
Right, exactly.
People could open for you. You could open for other people. If only there was something like this.
Right.
And as speaking of performing in front of each other, when we walked in there at the room we're recording in, there was three juggling balls, and mm-hmm. you asked if I juggled.
Correct.
And I said no, and you subsequently went and picked them up.
Yep, I'm playing with juggling balls throughout this whole interview, and I'm sure I will continue to.
It's all right. And so, I mean, that just speaks again to the performer, to the vaudeville, to the, like, it's no, but it's in you, and it's just trying to get out. I mean, not to be over.
I'm also fidgety, you know.
It's all right. I used to say I'm a fiddler, but then people thought I played the violin.
Right, yeah.
So now I just click pens, which is great when you're recording audio.
Fidgeter on the roof. Patent pending. I mean, if you think of juggling, it's a great example of what I like in performance, you know. It's a very simple but impressive thing. And then if you want to take it to the next level, you have to think of how to do this, a new type of juggling, a new way to throw it and catch it in a compelling way. And something that simple that you just work at over and over again to perfect that. I love it. Can't get enough.
Yeah. So it's actually, that's really interesting because I think comedians can be, maybe as a general rule, analytic people, but you don't necessarily, that's not the public persona that they wear.
Right.
But really it is when you're talking about refining those jokes, changing the words, you know, like trying
totally.
To find that night after night after night after night.
I apologize if this is pretentious, but I think of stand-up, it helps me to think of stand-up as like you have to learn how to build the better car and then also how to drive the car better, you know? So like you have to really be working on both of those things. You have to get better material all the time, and then you also have to figure out how to perform that material in a compelling way, you know? And I think stand-ups, if they think what they're doing now versus a year ago, oftentimes they might be able to feel a difference, even if they can't totally name it. Just the way that they're able to work with a crowd will improve.
Do you think that way of thinking and processing came from, I mean, to me it sounds like a writer and an editor, like going back and doing this stuff. Is that maybe what brought you into the idea of wanting to be a writer in the first place? Just that's the way your mind works?
I think I wanted to be a writer because I liked the idea of creating worlds and stories and characters and telling those. And that, because I liked reading those and seeing those. So that was so compelling.
Mm-hmm.
But you almost can't help but be analytical. If I guess, you know, like there are times I wish I could just kind of dump that part of me because it takes me out of certain things.
Yeah.
But that's who I am and who I've always been. So I think that's part of why stand up, which is a solitary act, is why I was drawn to it, you know?
My name is Ian Abramson. How much time do I have left?
You got 15 minutes.
About 15 minutes, okay. I was hoping for a little longer. I just got out of a relationship. My ex-girlfriend said that she was tired of walking on eggshells around me. And I was like, listen, that's just how I decorate. You know what I mean? Earlier, Tommy asked me what I thought about the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I said I'd marry the witch. Fuck the wardrobe.
moving to LA can be tough because it's so different. If you're moving from, well, any city other than LA, it's different than LA. LA is unique. So it's sprawling and it's weird and you have to get used to the traffic and you kind of have to become zen about the traffic where it's just like, I'm in traffic right now. You know, it's not a bad thing or a good thing. I'm just here. And that's a tough hurdle to jump over. But it's been great. There's what people don't tell you about LA is that it's full of people who really want to do things. When people think about LA, they think about the type of person who is totally insincere and hollow and trying to climb the ladder for anything. And sure, those people are out here, but most of the people wanting to do cool stuff are just out here trying to do cool stuff.
Yeah.
And there's lots of them and you'll be able to find them and work with them. It's a city that's not afraid to take its work seriously because it is an industry out here. You know, the people on TV were broke years prior and now we're on TV and
we'll be broke in the couple
I'm sure.
Years again.
Right. You know, that's kind of the nightmare dream, depending on where you're at on that roller coaster. Yeah.
How would you describe your comedy style?
Ooh.
You mentioned that it's... you said something else. You said experimental. You said...
You said experimental. I said absurd.
Absurd. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, yeah. People will describe it as absurd, high concept, or experimental. And those all sound like compliments to me, so I'll take it.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Like, I mean... How long did it take you to sort of land in that field that you play in?
I think this is true for most comedians. You're kind of just peeling away layers that aren't the comedian that you are. And those other pieces are always there, but you slowly realize how to just be more of what it is that you want to do and are good at. I was doing weird high concept bits when I was doing open mics in mm-hmm. college, you know, when I wasn't even really doing stand up, I would have things like that. But I
did those resonate with you then? Were you like, this is
that was what all I wanted to do? Yeah, I was obsessed.
You
with
would
it.
Do that and you're like, this is it, and then you do a different thing, and you're like, it was fine, but like, I like that other thing more.
Yeah, I think what it was like those were the sort of jokes that excited me the most, but then I was also excited by the idea of like trying to write a good joke. Just like, oh man, just writing a good joke is still just a beautiful thing, you know? Reading Jack Handy, who did the Deep Thoughts, and his novel, The Stench of Honolulu, is the funniest book I've ever read. It's unbelievable. Every single line is a perfect one-liner. And I've always been amazed by him. And he's a great example because he also has this this piece called A True Story of What Happened to Me. And I think like the real premise in his head was like, I'm going to just repeat the word hammer a bunch, like something along the lines of that. And he just tells this bizarre story. And I was in tears reading it the first time. And it's what I love about it is it's the sort of piece that sometimes I read it and I don't find it that funny. And then I'll read it again. And it is the most funny thing in the world to me. It's because it's so delicate in that way, because it's just an odd piece. Like he's capturing just a very particular voice and doing a very particular thing with it. The True Story of What Happened to Me, I think, is what it's called. Go out and read it, because it's like you might read it and be like, this doesn't make any sense to me, and that's okay. But to me, that's what is so exciting. That's what I know. Comedy is going to make everyone laugh, so if that is the thing that makes me laugh harder than anything else, then I'm in love with it.
Has the show started? Are we going, or is it how long have you guys been here? long? Oh boy, is it? Well, welcome to Bellhop. Have we started yet? What is happening? Yeah, give it up for you guys. I'm sorry if I've kept you waiting. I was supposed to clean this up. I got really into the preschool punk show that happened before it. Supposed to clean up their mosh pit, ball pit, whatever, you know. That's preschool punk, right? You know, they'll do anything themselves. DIY, you know what I mean, guys? All right. Are we having fun? Are you? Who here has been to Bellhop before? What a weird way to say that. Bellhop before, you know what I mean? Clap it up if it's your first time here. All right, a lot of first-timers, a lot of returners. We are going to have a great time. My name is Ian Abramson. We are going to have a kind of insane comedy show for you guys. We have some of the best performers in Chicago and my favorite performers in the world. So I'm very excited that we're getting to do this and show you this. Yeah, that's kind of me and my life. How are you guys? Great. Well, okay. What do you guys think about gluten-free bread for a boy's name? For a boy's name? Okay, great. Okay, I'll keep that on the top of the list. You know what I mean? All right. Oh, boy. I moved to Los Angeles about a year ago. Moved, and I found the people there are very giving. Very giving. The other day on the side of the road for the taking, I picked up some candles. Picked up some stuffed animals. Picked up a portrait of an old man. I'd love to thank the guy, but all it says is Rip Dave. You know what I mean? Oh, boy. Oh, man, what a time. What a night. Oh, man. Tell me if this has ever happened to you guys. The other day, Google asked me to reset my password. They said I needed 8 unique characters. So I entered an entire Tennessee Williams play.
I do a show sporadically at the Virgin Hotel in Chicago. And we got the opportunity to do an episode of the Comedy Show featuring Bellhop, that show at the Virgin Hotel. And that's like a bizarre take on comedy shows, you know? Fun, weird things will happen. I got heckled by a barbershop quartet, you know? So all 4 of them at different times were heckling me. For that particular, what we did for the Comedy Show was that we turned the whole room into a ball pit. And so the audience was sitting in a ball pit, and at one point they didn't like my joke, so they all started throwing the balls at me. We did lots of fun weird stuff. It was good.
You're not just writing absurd jokes, but you're also producing absurd concepts for shows.
Sure, totally. Yeah, you know, I did a show in Chicago that was a funeral. It was a funeral for a prop comedian that died at 130 years old, you know, and we all came out. I wrote this obituary that was like this long history of his life, and then people came and gave eulogies, and that was the funeral of Henry Soap Floats, and it was a fun, weird experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I started doing more things like that.
And now one of them is even a show on Comedy Central.
Yeah, it's on Comedy Central Digital. 7 Minutes in Purgatory is a show where comedians perform to a camera in one room and the audience watches from a separate room, so the comedians can't hear how the audience is responding. And that was just like
only in another room, but they're it's a soundproof room, and on top of that, they're wearing, you know, noise cancellation headphones.
Correct,
and stuff
correct,
like that.
Yeah. So,
how did that come to be?
You know, I was thinking about the relationship between the audience and the performer. I feel like such a. I promise my head is not this far up my ass.
It's a podcast.
So much as I just want it to be said. I know that this is a little like hoity-toity or whatever. I was thinking about just like the audience responds to the comedian, but also the comedian is responding to the audience. We're taking in what they're saying. We know if they're laughing or not. And I was just curious what would happen if that wasn't the case, yeah. You know, if it wasn't that, if it was kind of a one-way conversation.
Well, Brian Regan, mm-hmm. as the has said, you know, like a comedian's a musician and their instrument is the audience.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't heard that.
But yeah, so it is an interesting study of like how much, because you can watch comedy alone.
Totally.
And what did you learn about that connection between the performer and the audience?
Oh, man, it's an odd one, and it's not one that you think of. I find that it makes the audience more aware that they are part of the experience. And in my experience, they're laughing harder because they realize that they're part of it. And there's this other context to realize that they can't hear anything. They probably feel like they're bombing. And that adds some stakes and makes it feel it's fun. It's fun to watch. It is not always fun to do. people like sometimes people doing it will have a total blast and sometimes they'll lose their mind. But either way, the audience is eating it up because they get it. You know, yeah. if a comedian is sweating and being like, I don't know how I feel right now, that is hilarious in that context, you know, because it's true. They're seeing it. They're feeling that. Mm-hmm. And so when a comedian just has a sincere moment like that, or I've seen just like a sigh, like releasing some tension with a sigh, get a huge laugh, you know, just saying a punchline, taking a minute, and then whew, it'll get a huge laugh because they know what that means. They're feeling it. So, yeah.
No, it's, you know, you always wonder, people who are often drawn to performing in front of an audience have a certain validation that they're searching for, and I don't necessarily mean that in a negative sort of way, you know, like, so to pull that away, do people often come out of the room like, how did I do, was that okay, like asking all those questions?
Without exception, yeah. I don't know that anybody's come out and not said that.
I did great, I killed it.
no, yeah, I mean, you're curious, you have to be, you don't know how you did.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I know Harlan Williams did a special.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that on the mountain. That was really cool. Yeah.
And so it's weird because, but also I'm grateful that people like you, like he, like are pushing these boundaries, because why is the audience and the performer so tied together? Like, I mean, obviously there's a one-to-one relationship where you're performing for people and they're giving you that feedback. But at the same time, too, like just to sort of examine it from a different angle, to have that perspective shift.
Totally.
Is I think, important. And I think it's like a concept car for the automobile industry. Like,
sure.
People do these things, they don't end up getting made. Or like high fashion on like runway, you know.
Totally.
Like the joke is, you know, the hack joke is always like, this car is ugly, no one's going to drive it. Or these clothes are so weird, like who's going to wear a spaceship on their back or whatever, you know. Great analogy, Andrew. but if you look back, like that, when it trickles down into the more mainstream, like it actually does have a really powerful and palpable effect, and that's what's keeping people coming back and keeping it's driving the consumption again in the best possible word of consumer, you know, meaning of that sort of stuff. So it's like, I don't know really what I'm trying to say here, but it's just it's interesting, it's important, it's good, and I'm grateful for people like you who are willing to do these interesting experiments.
Totally. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. People find you online
at Ian Abramson. Google that, and you'll find me. And if you tell me, if you tweet at me that you heard me from this podcast, I will absolutely retweet that. So make sure to put a political message in that too. Yeah, and you can also find me on CISO. If you go to the Comedy Show, my episode is Bellhop, and it has a bunch of my favorite comedians, and we do a lot of cool stuff. So check it out. And also, you can look up 7 Minutes in Purgatory, the show I was talking about, that there are plenty of episodes online. If you just Google 7 Minutes in Purgatory, there's so many greats on there. Dave Hill, Joel Kim Booster, in the newest season, Maria Bamford, John Doerr. It'll be great. So check it out.
Thank you so much for listening. For those of you that listen and live in Los Angeles, I wanted to tell you about Ian's new show, Modern Vaudeville. It's every Tuesday night at the Lyric Hyperion in LA, and it starts March 7th, and it's already got a great lineup of guests, including Patton Oswalt, for 3 out of the 4 weeks. So, LA fans, be sure to check that out. I think you will really enjoy that. Anyways, thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a great week. Take care. Thank you.